Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. We're speaking to a favorite of the AMA Edgewise podcast audience. Actually, Chip, I don't know whether or not you know this, but you were our first guest.
I did not know that.
Yeah, just a little bit of history. You were our first guest back in April of 2007. You were 6 years ago. You were our first podcast guest. So we've worked with Chip on various other programs, at least one other podcast and one or maybe even two other webcasts we've done with him. We love working with him. He's a popular keynote speaker. He's the author of 19 books, including Wired and Dangerous, and he's a senior partner and founder of the Chip Bell Group, a consulting firm specializing in customer loyalty. His work has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Fortune, Fast Company, and other major media. But all that aside, Chip is a friend of mine. Hey, Chip, how's it going?
I'm doing absolutely awesome, and I'm thrilled to be back with you.
We're actually talking to Chip about the release of Managing Your Socks Off service, the third edition. Okay, what have we learned over the course of these three editions? What's changed in the field of customer service, Chip?
I think, first of all, the customer's changed. We are all customers. We know we've changed, and I think there's a lot of things that's changed us. Obviously, the internet's had a huge impact. The demise of the economy through our recession has had a big impact. But I think more and more customers are getting great experiences in pockets of their life. And what they do is they often generalize that experience to everyone else they're dealing with. And so I think the change in the customer has, first of all, left them a lot pickier. That is, they only care about value. They also are a lot more fickle. Loyalty is not something they have like they used to a brand. They'll sort of drop you in a heartbeat. But obviously they're vocal, and because they're wired, because they're connected like they used to, they have a much bigger impact on impacting their reputation of the organization very, very quickly. Just one quick quote. Jeff Bezos, obviously the CEO of Amazon, said, "In the physical world, an unhappy customer will tell six people, but in the cyber world, they can tell 6,000. And the quickness of that, I think all of that has led to a very different customer, meaning this edition is all aimed at trying to capture a better understanding of the ever-changing customer.
What do you say to people when you're at Starbucks or hanging out in a bar or wherever Chip Bell hangs out? What do you say
more
to people?
More bars than Starbucks.
Okay, good to know. What do you say to people who come up to you and say, "I don't know, Chip, the cool place to be in business these days is innovative products." You know what I mean? Cool, sexy products cool marketing programs and stuff like this. Customer service, that is so yesterday. What do you say to those people?
Well, what I say to them is, if you look at the statistics, it is all about how customers define value. And that value definition has always been a function of three things. Did I get the product that I wanted, or outcome, in the case of organizations that don't build stuff? Did I get it at a fair price, and was the experience a positive one? Well, today's customer now assumes they're going to get a quality product or outcome. I mean, that's just sort of a table stake now. And they assume it's also going to be delivered at a fair price or investment or fee or whatever it cost them. And so now more and more they're looking at the experience to say, was it valuable to me? And so, again, the core of how we create that experience is through the service that we deliver. So I think, actually, while we might have been through a period where service was sort of ho-hum, we are learning now more and more it's critical in how the customer defines value.
How important is it for a manager to hire the right people?
I think it's critical because it starts there. It starts with how we find and retain great people, and that starts with finding the right selection. And one of the things that's changed is that we know today that it is important that we have people who have that service attitude throughout the organization. It's not just like the frontline folks have to be nice and friendly and courteous and know how to treat people well. Obviously, that's important. But what we know now is how people treat each other internally, the level of service they provide to each other, directly impacts the kind of service that's delivered externally. So hiring people, whether they're working behind the scenes in IT or HR or wherever, with a service attitude is just as important as those customer-facing employees.
We've done various podcasts on this topic, and it's come up several times, and it's along the same lines as hiring the right people. I'm fascinated by the Zappos model of paying people to quit.
Yeah.
You know, they get a week into their training, and they're basically pulled aside and said, okay, so you have a sense of what it takes to succeed here at Zappos. Tell you what, you know, we'll give you, you know, $2,000 or whatever. It's like a week's worth of the salary for what you've already put in here, plus a $1,000 bonus to just walk away now.
Mm-hmm.
How come more companies aren't doing that?
Well, I think more and more are. May they not be as bold as Tony Hsieh. He's a wealthy man, first of all. But I think what Tony has taught us in the Zappos model, if you remember, he had another company that he founded and hated to come to work and then sold it to Microsoft for $200 and something million. What he learned from that first experience was the culture we create is more important than short-term profits. It's more important in terms of how it impacts the long-term. And so he'd rather have the right people who have the right attitude and have the zeal for the Zappos values and have them at the beginning than invest in them and then have that not turn out well. Because we all know the cost of hiring and placing somebody and all the training they have to do is a huge investment. And then later on, if they turn out to be the wrong person, we've got all the documentation and all the counseling, all the coaching, all the performance reviews that go into that. There's a lot of time involved in that. And so he's smart enough to recognize, if I got somebody that we decide or they decide, this is not right for me, this is not what I thought, it's a better investment to say, here's $2,000, be well, go someplace else, than to wait later on where the cost of their exit might be many times greater.
Oh, God, it must have been 15 years ago or so, there was a classic business book that was written by an airline executive out of, I think, Europe, and it was called The Turning Point. And it was basically how to rise from the ashes, how to come back from a failure or a customer service failure or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was before social media. That was before the internet conversations that we're having right now. Is it still possible to come back from a failure?
Oh, it is. And I think a classic example in that is, since you talked about the airline industry, is JetBlue. If you remember, JetBlue was the dog in the industry after the tarmac incident on Valentine's, where they kept people on the tarmac for, I don't know, 14 hours.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they were destined to be on the Business Week customer elite, and then they got pulled from the list after that. But what you saw happen after that was you saw the CEO, one, go very, very public, took out a full page notice in the USA Today and Wall Street Journal, apologizing for their error, for what happened, creating a sort of code of conduct for customers, an agreement with customers. He was very public, very upfront, provide great retribution to the customers involved, and from that, turned it around, and the following year, they were on the list of Business Week Customer Service Elite. Part of the reason he was able to make that shift so quickly, turn it around, and recover so well was the fact that he already had a reservoir of trust and was well-liked by the customers who were there. It's a big lesson there that if you normally create an atmosphere and a relationship based on trust, then when you do have a hiccup, which you inevitably will, the customer will forgive you or certainly come back a lot faster. So that trust is super important in how it's delivered to the customer.
All right, so you've hired the right people, and you're very sensitive and aware to social media, all right?
Yes.
Now, this may seem like a self-serving question, self-serving of the AMA, but can you talk to me about the importance of training as it relates to customer service?
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's true for all, not just organizations who are in the business of delivering training. If the people who are delivering service don't have the competence and the confidence to deliver that kind of service, they're not going to be successful in the eyes of the customer. Customers today now have a fairly large standard of, I want somebody who knows what they're saying. How many times do we hear people complain about having to talk to some not real smart person on the phone on a call center who doesn't seem to know their product, doesn't seem to know their processes, and we very quickly abandon those organizations. So because the frontline particularly is the ambassador of the organization, their ability to not only have the competence, but as you heard me say, confidence. And what we know is with greater training and expertise comes greater confidence. And so I think if you look at those organizations that get incredibly high marks for customer service and look behind the scenes and say, what is their per-person investment in training? You see it's much higher than their competitors. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a great investment to provide people training in a host of ways, not just formal training, not just online training, but mm-hmm. having the leaders and managers who know how to mentor their employees is a critical part of, for that as well.
Well, that leads into sort of a parallel question. Going hand in hand with great training is what you refer to as coaching.
I mean, yes.
What makes for good coaching or great coaching as it relates to being a manager?
I think a partnership, first of all, an attitude of partnership that says, I want to help you grow and not just be your critiquer. If you look at the coaches that we all know, that we see on television, that produce great basketball, football, dance, athletes of various sorts, there is a true dedication to not just the person but what they can become. A focus on their potential, not just their foibles. And I think that's a characteristic of a great coach, is they believe in the person, demonstrate that belief, and focus on what they can become, not just what they are. And so that, to me, it requires compassion, it requires humility, it requires a sense of authenticity, and a clear communication of, I believe in you.
Chip, God, it seems like the distant past. I guess it wasn't all that long ago from a calendar standpoint. We used to reward and recognize great service. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Is that still important? And how can we do that these days when everyone seems to be so caught up in minding the bottom line and not spending too much money?
Well, I think we need to reframe it and not think about it as simply, I got to pay you a bigger increase. It's not just the compensation we provide, but I think what we know is even more important is the affirmation. Affirmation doesn't cost you anything. You know, the kind of recognition, the pat on the back. In many ways, research in psychology says for most employees, that is more important than the economics. Now, obviously, if you're in dire straits economically, you'd say, I'll take another $10 over a pat on the back because I got to put bread on the table. But for most employees, I think that affirmation and recognition is a very central part of building up what I call the self-esteem that can provide the bulletproof vest when dealing with customers who sometimes might be upset or angry or disappointed. That confidence comes from a belief that I am valued in this organization. And obviously, the kind of recognition that's provided helps signal that you are valued, that you're important. But the other side to that is that we create ways in which recognition and affirmation doesn't just come from a boss, but it comes from colleagues, it comes from peers, and it comes from customers. I work with Marriott, and some of their properties have created a cool system where when a customer, frequent guest, shows up, they're given a coin. They're told, give this coin to any employee you believe has done extra, and it has a dual goal, is an employee is given it, but then they turn around and in a some public celebration, give that coin to the back of the house person who was most instrumental in helping them deliver that extra mile service to the customer. And so the customer recognizes the person who's customer facing, but the employee they recognize turns around and recognizes an internal person as well. So it's those kinds of ways, I think, use that as an example, that organizations can use to say, let's look for lots of ways for that affirmation to come to the employee.
Okay, Chip, I'm going to cast you in the role of science fiction writer.
Oh, good.
I want you to futurize with me here
good.
A little bit. And this is the last question. What do you think managing your socks off service, the fourth edition, is going to dwell on? Or what do you think is coming down the pipe on that?
That's a great question, David. I think, first of all, more and more focus on innovative service, creative service, unique service, imaginative service. We know more and more that pretty good, okay service is ho-hum. And so I think all the ways that we'll add a sense of innovation to it is going to be a central part of it. The second is, how do we create a rich experience when the delivery mechanism might not be interpersonal, when it may be online, mm-hmm. it may be in other forms that don't involve a human being? But how do we still make that a rich experience, not just having a colorful website, but how do we touch people's hearts in the delivery, not just make it pretty aesthetically? But I think that's another one. And I think a third continuing effort is more and more how do we take the effort out of the delivery of service. More and more customers are saying, I need service that is effortless, that organizations that are easy to do business with. In some ways, effort can trump most ever feature in a service delivery. So creating that way to make it effortless, creating a way that makes it enriching, and creating in ways in which it can be more imaginative.
We've been speaking to Chip Bell about his book, the newly updated Managing Your Socks Off Service, 3rd edition. Chip, always a pleasure to talk to you.
My pleasure.
Follow the American Management Association on Twitter to learn about upcoming free programs, the latest news, management insights, and special offers. You can follow us at AMANET. That's AMANET. Hope to tweet to you real soon. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise. Thank you.